that these rules are simply innate in the immense evolutionary procedures of the universe. That these rules were created or were inherent in the first cells that began to break up into cosmic systems. But that these rules do hold and always will hold is becoming increasingly evident. There is no way in which the individual can break the rules successfully. And yet nearly everyone, out of the fact that he hasn't thought it through, is breaking more rules than he should. We are not expected to be perfect, but we must begin to take into consideration what constitutes orderly existence. Now we find this particularly perhaps in economics, where we have a tendency on the part of industries to go on forever, expanding and expanding and expanding until something happens. And the thing that happens is the big veto. One form of this veto is the exhaustion of natural resources. You can't use them when they're all gone. Therefore, nature places this restriction. If you want to last longer, conserve resources. If you waste them, you may expect that they will be exhausted and their values will be no longer available to you. Another basic resource is good, clean air. And if we pollute it too much, the veto sets in. You cannot do this and live. Therefore, the individual has to decide whether he wishes to do as he pleases and die, or do as he should and live. And a certain percentage choose death, because they would rather die than change their ways. Great industries have the same faults. They're going to go right on as they are until they fall over the edge into oblivion. But they are going to reach a point which everything reaches when it does it wrong, in which the power to further invalidate life is taken away from them. They can no longer do it. War is another. No war will ever result in peace. It cannot. It produces only more and more misery. But war itself has a great big veto on it, too. Because war demands the exhaustion of manpower, the exhaustion of natural resources, and hastens the inevitable collapse of life. In peace, we might have enough petroleum for 500 years. In a good, fast war, we could get rid of all of it in 3 months. Therefore, if we wish to exterminate ourselves, we can. But why should not those in positions of authority think a little bit about the evidence that was brought to them by their own perceptions and could be made real by reflecting upon obvious facts? One of the great delusions is to overlook obvious facts. But most people are willing to sacrifice facts for their own opinions, notions, and convictions. So everywhere the excess destroys itself. Everywhere the individual who has too much simply becomes a wastrel. A man earning a moderate salary and taking care of his family moderately can get along for a long time, perhaps. But if he is extravagant, wastes money, and overtaxes his abilities, the family can collapse in a few years. Everywhere, wisdom gives permanence. Ignorance and stupidity destroy permanence. These are all facts. You can stand on any street corner and see various manifestations of them. But most of all, you realize that in all these areas, individuals, human beings, are failing to use the equipment that was given to them to help them to survive. Nature must have had a point in mind, and that point was that the human mind and its accessories were supposed to give the individual the skill to create a noble destiny for himself. He has the right. He has the power. But one by one, he has sacrificed his rights, and again he has compromised his powers. in order to get ends that are not important, he has sold his own birthright. He has sacrificed his principles for profit, either for himself or for those who employ him. He has lost sight of the fact that this world was not created as an industrial economic system. It was created as an area in which living things could grow, fulfill themselves, in which human beings could develop the potentials that are in them, potentials of incredible beauty and integrity. And we have some way kind of forgotten the whole thing. We are perfectly willing to let it drift along in this way. Now, we can't break all of the rules. We can't get away from all the pressures that afflict us. But we can make a start. We can choose what we want to do in life. We can pick a career that is suitable to us. We can say to ourselves, I want to do something that will pay me $12,000, $15,000 a year. But of course, I probably would prefer to do something I do not want to do, but which will pay me $50,000 a year. So we do what we do not want to do for $50,000. As a result, the individual is nervous, sick, unadjusted, is in danger of a broken home, develops extravagant families and spendthrift children, and out of trying to build a life upon income alone comes to grief. Because again, the veto is there. Anyone who worships the golden calf is going to perish with it. So the individual who makes a decision to elevate material gain over mental and emotional growth will ultimately come into trouble. And when he gets into this trouble, he swings in all directions trying to find a way out. But he cannot find the way out as long as he wants to cling to the things that cause the trouble. So many people can choose more wisely the things they want to do. And, strangely enough, as you may have noticed, it is that the decision is not as serious as you may think. Because the thing you thought you wanted to do that would give you the big salary may be bankrupt in 5 years. Whereas a steady, sincere occupation, particularly if it has social significance, may go on from one generation to another without end. Everything that is inflated deflates. But the long problem involving the continuing needs of humanity, this type of thing will go on. But that which caters only to the wants of humanity is in very fragile condition. Education, then, should largely emphasize the importance of the individual being himself. Not in the egotistic sense, but in the sense of the varied potential within his own nature. He was put here with a job, and fortunate is the person who finds what his job really is. But he can, if he has integrities, work out some of these things, and moderation helps. And moderation is something that generally comes as a realization of the failure of excess. Moderation is something learned painfully, but it does not need to be learned that way. Moderation is to take what you can do well and can do it throughout a lifetime without undermining health or losing the friendship of your friends, breaking up your relative patterns, or your children. All these things can be worked out because we were given the instruments to solve the problem. Now, another thing that the instruments nearly always seem to provide, because they are a combination of both emotion and thought, they provide a great deal of strength to beauty. They make things very wonderful, and we look around us and we see the worlds of art, of music, of drama and dance. We see the tremendous skill of architecture. We see all the grace and glory of the world. And somehow we know that all of this came out of the human soul, as Plotinus tells us in his essay on the beautiful. All the beauty in the world came out of us. That is man-made beauty. Natural beauty is still greater but it is the service of natural beauty that creates human beauty. It is a combination of understanding natural laws and perfecting nature through art. So beauty is important. Happiness is important. The joy of living, the doing of things that are kindly and non-profitable, are more important than the great profit-sharing enterprises. And every day we find people being hoodwinked who are trying to get more than they can earn by honest and reasonable means. So the mind can settle down and think these things through. The individual who left the farm when he was 10 or 12 years old and went to the great city and made his fortune, when he's 65, begins to have an irresistible impulse to get back to the farm. And he generally does. He discovers that all these different things he went through have only helped him to realize the serene significance of the gentle life. They tell the story of an old Indian sitting in front of his hogan down in the southwest, and a young efficiency expert type of person comes along and says to the old Indian, who is smoking his calumet quietly, he says, "Why don't you work?" And the old Indian says, "Why?" And the man says, "Well, if you work, you earn money." "Why?" "Well, if you earn money, you can have a bigger teepee." "Why?" "And when you retire, you can have money to rest on. You don't have to work in the later years of life. You can live in leisure." And he looked at him and says, "Me no work, me live in leisure now." Well, that's an Indian point of view, but there is a certain modicum of integrity behind it. That we are all trying desperately to do things that really do not add up to much when we get them done. So we have a lot of jobs in this world that need doing. Jobs that have to do with making this a more beautiful world, to make a world that is healthier, a world that is better morally and ethically. And in serve and reflect, we have to decide what we can do and stay within the reasons of the probable. Now, one of the things we should not do, but which we nearly always have a wild intent to do, and that is we should not try to change other people by telling them what to do. There is no successful way of reforming an individual who doesn't want to be reformed. And many people join organizations and even religions because these religions and organizations demand very little integrity of their followers. You cannot do it by talking. Nor can anyone else talk you into doing it. The great question is the inner experience in yourself of perception and reflection, of knowing and seeing in your own life what needs doing, and then developing the resources that enable you to do it. Now you can go along and you can say later, "I wish I'd studied a language." Then study it. "I wish I could get some kind of work in which I could continue at least part-time development of my artistic instincts." It can be done if the individual wants to badly enough. In every case, it is the willpower taking over to accomplish what the mind and the emotions tell us is best for us. Now, with that combination, you cannot beat. But until it is really established, if one falters, the others fail. So it is very necessary to have the integrity to make a right decision. Now, most people do not know with certainty what is a right decision on all matters. Lots of folks are well-meaning, but they do not really know what they should be doing and do not see just exactly how to find out. And this, of course, brings into focus one of the most important phases of human life, and that is religion. If the individual belongs to a reasonable religion, that religion will tell him what constitutes a good life. It will tell him what he should do and what he should not do. It will tell him about the golden rule and the Ten Commandments. It will help him to discover what the greatest minds the world has ever known have established as working principles upon which to build life career. Now, it doesn't follow that you have to believe or accept all of these different doctrines or faiths. But if you look around you in society using your perceptives and your reflectives, you will find that most of these great systems of faith have stood the test of time because they have been supported by irrefutable evidence. We know, basically, that we should not kill. We know, basically, that we should not steal. And wherever we kill, we're in trouble, and wherever we steal, we're in trouble. And whether we're caught or not is not the important point. To break the principle of integrity in ourselves is to get into trouble. Many people have wandered away from their religions or compromised them simply because they've accepted the religion as a creed. Some have moved from difficult faiths to simple ones. A few have moved in the opposite direction. But the proof of that, again, is through the use of the perceptive and reflective faculties in your own constitution. It is not very long, or take very long, or very difficult to find out that thou shalt not kill is a pretty good law. You can look around you in every direction, national, social, economic, industrial, political. And destruction is not good. And the power that destroys ultimately destroys itself. So these principles can be supported not by the dogmas of a religion, but by the very faculties that man possesses within himself. He can see these things. And if he cannot see them, it is simply because he hasn't looked for them, or because he had some attitude in himself and closed his eyes when they came along. These laws and rules are obvious, and we cannot escape their inevitability. We cannot escape the importance and ability to face practically all the rules of life. Perhaps first and most of all, that we have to have an enduring faith in some great power, the power that created these things. And if you open your eyes and listen and think, you will see that the universe in which we live was not created by a fumbler. It was not created without understanding, insight, and consciousness superior to anything that we know. So whatever it was that created it and created us, it's a good idea to obey its rules, to try if possible to glorify rather than desecrate that which has been given to us. So religion can help us to put a foundation under things. But most of all, it helps us to tell what direction to look in order to find the rules working. Through the rules that are working, we can see in history, in science, in theology, politics, education, in industry. In all of these systems, the rule breakers are always in trouble. And no matter how glorious and wonderful and spectacular an area is, in the long run it crumbles and leaves everybody worse off. It is therefore possible for the individual to quietly sit down and decide in his own mind, not by the aid of the textbooks, not by political systems, not by atheistic scholars, but determine for himself what he believes about the source of his own existence. Because it's his own existence he's thinking about. It's the source of this that is of the most immediate concern to himself. Can he understand the reason for his own being? What is he? Why is he? How is he? And he has to somehow decide that type of question in order to get the power to perceive and reflect upon what is happening around him. Once he gets his rules straight and uses his faculties to observe their function in society, he is on comparatively safe ground. Many people make misstatements, but nature makes few mistakes. And whatever nature ordains, that is correct. And whatever man discovers to be the laws governing natural procedure, those laws are the safest things to stay with that we know. And it is important to keep them, and keep them every day of our lives, so that we really will do probably what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to sit here planted on benches and chairs the rest of our existence. We are not supposed to live until we die, and then somebody else takes over. We are much more important than this, without being egocentrically important. We are growing things, revealing and releasing a power of the divine through ourselves. We are trying desperately to be the good children of the eternal plan. We want to know something about the divinity that dwells within us. We want to know how we can serve that, and how we can grow in grace and greatness, truly, by obeying the very basic humanitarian rules of existence. And somehow out of it all, we know the answer lies that there will be no solution to this until we really experience the oneness of all religious beliefs and the brotherhood of all peoples, of all races, all nations, and all persuasions. The unified world can endure. The divided world will perish. We have already divided it and subdivided it time and time again. One dictator after another has strutted across the stage. And still, the end is not yet. And now it seems that this mammoth process of trying to destroy the inalienable rights of human beings is going on a higher tempo than ever before. But actually, all of it depends upon a kind of subtle acceptance. The individual passing over it lightly because it's advantageous to him at the moment to make the most he can of the contracts that these situations set up. But we cannot validate this attitude. So we can become again like children. Children love everything and are always asking questions. They're always amazed and full of wonder. They're always living in a world of great potential, great possibility, and they have a strange and sometimes unreasonable respect for their elders. These children are physical children. We are mental and emotional children. We are not truly mature. When a mature person comes along, we generally assassinate them because we do not know how to handle the situation. We are still growing through a period of extreme egotism when we think we know more than there is to know, and an extreme selfishness in which we want to get more than there is to get. These factors are damaging us, and will damage us as long as we endure them. So whenever the opportunity comes for the individual to support something that is going in the right direction, this is important. If he has the opportunity to change his own point of view and be better than he is now, it is his duty. Because after all, we also like to think of something else. We like to think that the human being has an immortality. That the human being is not something that is going to lie down in the grave and die forever. Many people who have short thinking on these subjects like to assume it makes very little difference because we're going to be dead and that's that. Now, if we think, if we use prospective thinking and receptive thinking, we are going to realize that there's something wrong with our attitude toward the continuity of ourselves. No intelligent providence will create something, place it in a condition of constant stress, demand something from it more than is normally expected, and then at the time of age and old weakness of faculties, simply destroy this thing. There is simply no reason for the existence of the human being if you tuck him away in Forest Lawn forever. This is not reasonable. Nothing in nature dies. Science is beginning to discover this. Everything is changing forms, changing appearances, changing cycles of manifestation, but nothing begins or ends. Space does not begin or end. Time does not. Life does not. There is an infinite manifestation of life. Life going on forever. Life vital today as on creation's primal morn. Therefore, the individual looking around and trying to explain himself comes finally to the realization that any explanation of himself which ends with his own physical decrepitude frustrates the whole purpose of his existence. If he reflects upon his own mortality, he will lose his own humanity. They cannot dwell together. The moment we deny the immortality of the human soul, we deny God's creative power. We also deny the reason for anything. Now, if we deny the reason for anything, and it was a pleasant situation, we might even exonerate that. If things here were wonderful and happy, we might be saying, well, I'm satisfied, I've had my span. But with things very difficult here, there seems to be no reason why we should assume that a physical life consummates our growth, releases our potentials, fulfills our destiny, or glorifies the divine power that created us. So out of the problems of thoughtfulness and reflection upon phenomena, reflection upon that which is perceived, comes the recognition of the immortality of the human soul. It has existed from the dawn of time. It is one of man's first adventures, was the discovery of the eternality of himself. So if we are actually this eternal beings, then we have all the more reason to recognize the infinite potential of growth. If we are really human beings, we are in a kind of school. And in this school there are many grades. And we cannot say I finished my education because I graduated from kindergarten cum laude. I know that there are cases now where they are giving cap and gown to puppy dogs that have fulfilled their training requirements. But this is not just exactly what we need at the moment, most of all. What we need is to realize that we're always graduating from something, but to graduate from almost anything we know is to enter in the first grade of something else. The individual who has graduated from the ordinary ways of life is challenged instantly by a greater way of life. And the fulfillment of any step that we take is the first step towards something better. Therefore, we are eternally growing. This makes another important contribution to our well-being, and that is long-range thinking. The moment we stop thinking of life as terminating at some given time, not certain or uncertain, instead of that, we begin to think of ourselves as ever-existing life, moving through an infinite diversity of manifestations, but always and forever growing and unfolding. And that everything we do is a foundation upon which to build something else. If we are lazy here for several lifetimes, we simply set back our own development. We are less than we could be if we had kept on growing thoughtfully and carefully every day. Now, thinking about the survival in this sense of the word, we can definitely take into consideration that no matter what we do, we will not finish it. The great architect weeps because he needs more time to learn. Hokusai, the great Japanese artist, wept because he could not be a great artist unless he was able to live to be 100 years, and he didn't make it. All the painters, the musicians, all the great thinkers of the world have had to lay down from their labors. They've had to put aside their tools. They've had to rest for a while. And in many cases, they have grudged this interference with the infinite growth of things. But in nature, these rest periods are just as useful as the periods of labor. So when we begin to grow here, begin to study life, and begin to take on more consideration for the values of living, this is because we are just starting on another course. We are going to use what we learn today for the rest of an interminable and unknown existence. We are going to use what we live on now as the basis of our thoughts, our emotions, tomorrow and then tomorrow. Little by little, upon the foundations that you start today, the whole future develops. And the individual has a much better reason for living, much happier conviction about self and circumstance, if he is able to think in terms of this larger life. Now, some think that it's a great penalty to have to live again. That's only because they haven't done so well this time. But there is no need for penalty. People who have really achieved much are not regarding themselves as penniless or penalized. And when the time comes to rest from labor, there is something that happens to these people. They drop off the physical body, yes, but that which they have learned goes on to enrich learning forever. The dreams they have started, they will dream again. And the whole of humanity moves forward because each individual grows a little every day. And that is why we try desperately to grow a little every day. And in order to do it, we have two great examples. We have the examples of the great religions of the world and the messages that they have brought. Messages which have stood over the questions and doubts of ages and have survived to our time. And the other message comes to us from nature around us. The outer world we observe through reflection and perception. The inner world through meditation and prayer. These processes, working together, help to produce a normal person. They help us to fulfill the needs and responsibilities which are making us grow toward the infinite will which we seek to fulfill. We are all just, you know, working along in the big pattern. And every time they invent a new telescope, the pattern looks bigger. But the pattern out there isn't as big as it looks, strangely enough, because the pattern out there is not in conflict with itself. What we see through the telescope is getting along all right. It is fulfilling its purpose. We don't hear any reports coming to us of great social objections from anywhere. There is no evidence that the universe is mad at itself or anything of that nature. It is fulfilling. It is going on. And therefore, the whole story of nature, whether it be in mathematics or physics or biology, the whole story is one of law forever fulfilling itself. And therefore, and essentially, it's very simple. It is simply truth expressing itself in its own way. Man, however, is a little more complicated. He doesn't see these things. He doesn't see this clear flow of realities through the environment in which he lives. They're there, but he doesn't see them. And he cannot force other people to see them. But he can begin to discover for himself his own place in everlastingness. The Egyptians referred to this condition beyond what we know as everlastingness. That which goes on and on and on. And while most of us live here in time, we were created originally to be fulfilled in everlastingness. And everlastingness means the joy of growing forever. The joy of learning more every day. The joy of loving more sincerely and deeply every day. Until finally we come to that end in which all virtues are one. And all virtues rest in an unknown but eternal power which we can never understand until we are returned to it in complete union and foreverness. But we all have an opportunity just every day to learn a new lesson. We can learn it from the neighbor and the gardener. We can learn it from the merchant and the shopkeeper. We can learn it in the car. We can learn it anywhere. there are always lessons to learn, and they all point in the same direction, that the individual must fulfill himself, must do all that he can to be that self which is locked within him. And if he succeeds in doing that and fulfilling his own proper place in the divine plan, he'll come out all right. He may have a few bumps and a few scars before he gets there, but he will realize that he is the master of his own destiny. He is the captain of his own soul, and it is up to him to start to steer this vessel of himself toward the ultimate harbor which we are all seeking to find. If we do these things thoughtfully and wisely and lovingly, we'll get along all right. Well, thanks a lot.